Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order, February 27th, 2020. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilson, Senator Wilkowski, and myself, Stedman. We have one item on the agenda today. We're going to talk about and have a presentation from the administration dealing with the proposed FY 2020 amendments and FY 21 proposed budget amendments. So I'd like to go ahead and ask OMB, the OMB director, to come forward. He can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and then in the event that Mr. Steininger, if you want to, you know, call a lifeline or what have you, that's fine. We'll just kind of roll through the issues and see where they take us. We have an hour and a half, 2 hours this morning. So with that, go ahead and introduce yourself and start your presentation, please.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. So today I'll be going over the governor's amended budget as well as amendments to the supplemental budget. In total figures, the amendments for the FY 21 operating budget total an additional $45.4 million in UGF. The total all funds change is $42.4 million. There's also in the FY 21 operating budget an amendment with an FY 2020 effective date for $815.9 million from the earnings reserve. In the FY 2020 supplemental budget, the amendments total $30.5 million in UGF.
And if you could, for those watching at home, let's try to stay away from acronyms so
yes.
People at home can follow this conversation. Because that's go ahead and continue.
Okay. This next page shows the impact of those amendments on the total overall picture of state spending for both fiscal year 2020 and fiscal year 2021. The important point here is on the bottom line, the updated surplus and deficit in FY 2020, the deficit is $510 million, and in FY 2021, that's about $1.6 billion, and those amounts would come out of the constitutional budget reserve.
Okay, and for clarity, why is there a billion-dollar difference? Is there a difference in the dividend draw, or is there, what's the driving factors?
The driving factor for the difference between FY 2020 and FY 2021 in terms of revenue available for state spending, there's a reduction of $1.1 billion. That's related to the amount of draws that are available from savings for government after adjustment for the dividend payment. In spending numbers, FY 2021 is down by about $50 million in the total appropriations between both operating and capital.
Okay, so isn't there a difference in the dividend amount between those two fiscal years?
Yes, the difference between FY 2020 and FY 2021 for the dividend amount, there's with the proposed supplemental amendment to the governor's operating budget, the FY 2021 dividend deposit into the dividend fund would be $120 million greater than the amount in FY 2020. Both of those reflect the statutory calculation for the dividend payment.
So for those watching at home, last year's dividend of $1,600 in FY 20, FY 21 proposals, roughly $3,000, is that not correct?
That is correct.
Does that have a significant change in those numerics at the bottom line?
That would impact the bottom line deficit, yes.
By roughly how much?
The increase in the deficit between FY 2020 and FY 2021 is about $1.1 billion.
Okay. So we want to remember that we're trying to communicate our fiscal position to the people of the state of Alaska. It's not so much these committee hearings are not so much for the committee members that are engulfed in this subject matter year in and year out, but it's for those Alaskans at home to better understand what we're doing and what we're struggling with and why we're having such difficulty getting our budget balance. In a simple way of looking at it, it's about $1 billion spread between last year's $1,600 dividend and this year's proposed $3,000 dividend. Senator Von Imhoff.
And I think what's important in this is to also, when we identify the fund source, talk about the short and long-term impacts on that fund source moving forward. If we begin to take money from the ERA, what does that mean? I mean, those of us who are watching the market, we've had a 2,000-point drop in the last couple days. Price of oil's down to 50. So decisions that we make now will have consequences, and it's important to look at the environment that we're working within as well.
So we're going to go through the governor's amendments today. We'll have legislative finance come forward, and we'll be looking at some comparisons with last year's numerics with some adjustments. So we'll get a partial view today. Coming next week, we're going to take a little deeper dive into why the numbers are different between the 2 years. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, we passed legislation a few years ago that limits the draw from the ERA to 5.25% and outgoing years 5%. My question to you is, what is the administration's position on addressing that and following that law, just as the governor's position is to follow the current law on a dividend of $3,000? Does the administration acknowledge that law and want to follow the law that was signed by previous governor on limiting the draw of the ERA and not put that fund into jeopardy?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, in the FY 2021 budget, we have adhered to both conflicting statutes, the statute regarding the payment of the dividend as well as the draw from the POM, the POMV, the percent of market value draw from the ERA. Our amendment in FY 2020 draws an additional amount from the ERA in order to comply with the statutory dividend formula.
So my follow-up question is that the security, when the legislature passed the legislation to limit the draw, it was concerned about the future of the fund. So the future of the fund, in the view of this administration, is less important than a $3,000 dividend. That is the assumption that I draw from your comments. Is my assumption correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the position of the administration is that we follow the statutory formula on the dividend and also work to make changes to ensure that we don't end up in a situation where we have to continue into the future overdrawing from the ERA.
Okay, so let's move on, and we'll come back to this later on. I think there's an amendment dealing with that issue later in the day, so we want to not get stuck on the first page.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So a handful of statewide items that are amendments within the package that we've put forward. You'll see throughout the package amendments to almost every component within, or almost every allocation within the budget related to salary adjustments. There was an error in the calculation made during the development of the FY 2021 budget that overstated the effects of some of the bargaining unit agreements, and so we've made adjustments to reflect a more accurate calculation. There's a fund transfer into the Fish and Game Fund Sport Fish Enterprise account. This is a deposit of the remaining balance of the Alaska Fish and Game Revenue Bond Redemption Fund. This is proceeds from an additional surcharge on fishing licenses that went to pay down bonds that were issued for various sport fish related projects. Those bonds will be paid off during this calendar year, and the remainder in that bond redemption fund will be deposited into the Sport Fish Enterprise account. We've added $55 million to pay financing on oil and gas tax credits. This is if the current litigation comes out in the state's favor, this would be the amount of debt service required. There's also an amendment with an FY 2020 effective date to deposit $815.9 million from the earnings reserve account into the dividend fund to make payments to those eligible in calendar year 2019 and calendar year 2020 of the amount of shortfall from the dividend paid in calendar year 2019.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the oil and gas tax credits, when HB 331 was presented to the legislature a couple of years ago, it had the first, according to this slide, which was presented to the legislature, it showed that the first aggregate payment for the first year would be $26.98 million. And now you're showing that in the first year it would be $55 million. Why the difference?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, in the slide that I think you're referencing, that tapers in the debt service payments. This $55 million represents a full year of debt service payments.
And I don't have that, so it makes it a little awkward, but go ahead. You have a follow-up?
Okay. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And I just want to remind people at home, these are suggested amendments from the administration. We at the committee will decide what modifications, if any, we'll do to the current year's fiscal, the current year's budget and also the proposed FY21 budget, just so those at home recognize these are suggested modifications. Go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Administration, there's a $1 million amendment to the Centralized Administrative Services Health Plan Administration. This is $1 million in other funds. These are the benefit system funds. It's for a third-party claims administrator contract. There's $169,000 in unrestricted general funds for mandatory patient-centered outcomes research institute research institute payments due to the Affordable Care Act. This is a mandatory fee that must be paid by all employers based on a headcount. There is a new recommendation from the Mental Health Trust for a public guardian position at a cost of $91,500 of Mental Health Trust authorized receipts. Within the Shared Services of Alaska, the accounting section, there is program receipt authority related to increased collection activities and vendor fees. So this is $500,000 of program receipts that helps to offset the cost of some of those centralized services that Shared Services performs. Within the Office of Information Technology, there's a transfer of position that was missed when we transferred the State of Alaska telecommunications system over to DMVA, and so we are cleaning that up. You'll see a matching transaction in DMVA in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to match to this.
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, There are two technical adjustments to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. When that commission was transferred into the department, a couple of items were missed. One was carry forward language related to carry forward to carrying forward receipts collected by that agency. There also is a transfer from the Department of Law. This is a technical adjustment due to the way that legal services on behalf of the commission are paid for, and there is a corresponding adjustment within the Department of Law as well, and that's $224,800 in designated general funds. In the Department of Corrections, there are three items related to increases in fixed costs. So these are cost increases related to risk management rates that the Department of Corrections pays. That would be the $3.2 million within Health and Rehabilitation Director's Office, the $837,000 within Information Technology relates to changes in rates charged for IT-related services, and in Administrative Services, there's $317,300, also related to other central services rates. The Department of Corrections requires some additional support in order to ensure that those cost increases don't impact operations within the prison system. Additionally, there's a reduction of $17.8 million in UGF related to out-of-state contractual services. So this is to reflect the change in direction that happened after release of the 2021 budget to pull back that RFP to send prisoners out of state.
Go ahead and continue your slide. I'll get the questions when he's done with the slide.
And that concludes the slide.
Okay, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So, you know, being part of the DOC subcommittee, we're interested in the out-of-state contract. So a couple questions. Was the $17.8 million actually paid to an out-of-state vendor, and are we just clawing back the money, or what was the flow of the money?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this 17.8 is for the FY 2021 budget, so it hasn't been appropriated yet nor spent. So this is removing funding that was included in the governor's 2021 budget in reflection of not needing that money in that place in the budget for our current plan for how we will operate the prison systems in 2021.
Okay, final question. Is there any severance that is owed to this prison, as in like a contract, if you cancel out and there's like a penalty?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, my understanding is that the RFP was canceled and no contract had been awarded at that point. I don't know if there's any, you know, protest or anything along those lines.
You can get back to the committee on a more refined answer on that, just to make sure that is clear, because we don't want to inadvertently, you know, with good intentions, not have as accurate of information as absolutely possible, because it just create indigestion. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $17.8 million looks as though it's a savings. And my question to you is, how many inmates were going to be sent out of state at a lower cost? And I assume that was going to save the state of Alaska funds. But now that those inmates are going to be staying in the state of Alaska, where would they be staying, and why is this amount showing as a savings when, if they stay in the state of Alaska, we would be spending more funds? So where are they going to be, and where are the additional dollars going to come from as a result of them staying in state?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, also included in the supplemental budget is a lapse extension for an appropriation to reopen the Palmer Correctional Center. So that lapse extension would extend money intended to reopen Palmer into FY 2021 to ensure that the department, you know, can reopen that facility, which is where, you know, how they would accommodate the increased prison population. So there is other money elsewhere, not necessarily included in this amendment package, but there is other money elsewhere in the budget to ensure that the department's capable of housing the inmates.
And where would that show up in the budget, Mr. Chairman?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the lapse extension for the Palmer facility would show up in the supplemental budget that was proposed by the administration. There's other authority within the governor's operating budget that also addresses, you know, inmate costs.
And how much might that be?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't know the total amount off the top of my head. The amount for the Palmer facility is about $16.7 million.
We can have also the subcommittee come back with more detail on that whole issue, Senator Hoffman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm trying to point out is that this $17.8 million on this one page is not a complete savings to the state of Alaska. In fact, by keeping those inmates in state, it's going to cost the state of Alaska more funds than what's portrayed here in savings. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilson.
No, Mr. Chair, he answered my question about the funding for the Palmer facility. Was this $17 million going to be transferred into the Palmer? But he already answered the question. It's going to be in the supplemental.
And then there was questions from Lukowski and Olson. Is that correct? Senator Von Imhoff. I thought you guys were flagging me down for. That's fine. Okay, go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Education and Early Development, there is $53.9 thousand related to Alaska Technical and Vocational Education funding. You will see amendments related to what we call TVEP, the Technical and Vocational Education Fund, throughout these budget amendments in various areas. An update to the estimate of amount available for distribution from that fund was made subsequent to the release of the governor's budget, and so there are amendments to adjust accordingly. And there's also $211,000 in federal receipt authority for a new grant within museum operations. It's the Alaska's Cultural Organizations and Emergencies federal grant. This is to ensure that in times of emergency, that historical artifacts and other such things are cared for. In the Department of Environmental Conservation,
Senator Hoffman?
I have a question on slide 8, deed. Previously at this table, we were going over the need for treating all people in the state of Alaska fairly, and it goes to your point, Mr. Chairman, on adequate funding for the swimming pool in Mount Edgecombe. It was suggested by this committee that the administration review that, and if they felt that there were inequities in the treatment of people in Mount Edgecombe, that they come forward to this committee with an amendment to address the adequate funding for the swimming pool in Mount Edgecombe. And my question to you is, was that considered, and was that decision not to come forward to request operational dollars for that swimming pool?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the governor's fiscal year 21 budget includes $650,000 of receipt authority to operate that facility. At this time, no change is being proposed by the administration to that funding.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe that receipt authority is the proper mechanism. With all of the projects that were pointed out by the chairman, none of the other seven projects were put in the operating budget for receipt authority. And I would say that the treatment of the individuals for the swimming pool in Mount Edgecombe should receive the same treatment as the others, and I find your response totally inappropriate, and everyone in Alaska particularly in rural Alaska, should not be singled out for receipt authority and should be funded by general funds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So on that subject, I am having, just for those watching at home and the committee members, I'm having conversations with the administration on a multitude of land transfers being requested for development in and around Mount Edgecombe High School. And that land is owned by the department. And we're trying to come up with a way of moving this project forward. There is no agreement yet, although there's a direction we're trying to pursue. So we will be bringing that back to the committee and looking for modifications of the FY21 budget, depending on how those conversations go in time frame. But clearly, as Senator Hoffman said, a receipt authority is just that, your ability to go out on the street with a tin cup. And it doesn't give you the opportunity to operate the facility where you're trying to collect money. So we're trying to work through that situation, and we'll be bringing either the agreed on solution with the administration back to the committee, or we'll be looking to the committee for directions on how to rectify that ourselves here at the table. So go ahead and but I would like to add, I think there is an amendment coming that you'll talk about later dealing with the FY20 budget concerning that pool issue. Is that not correct?
Chair Stemmen, I believe the funding for the pool was included in the supplemental budget, right, not the amendment package.
Yes.
Correct.
That gives us through this fiscal year, but yes. not the FY21 year. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to voice the same concern from the people in my district that are getting their education down in Edgecombe, as many of their parents and grandparents have done. But coming from a place where we have an inordinate and off the scale amount of drownings compared to other places along the state, around the state, I guess I'm watching this, the Mount Edgecombe pools issue that's been there for the last 10 years, it's always been treated as a stepchild. And so because of that, I'm very concerned that either there's not going to be enough funding to continue to maintain it after, since it's already been built, even with the land transfers that the chairman talked about. And part of that is because I think the lack of focus from the administration on trying to go ahead and get this valuable asset to try and make it so that we don't have the drownings in places that are in most need, because where I come from, almost everybody's on the water, and it's only a small percentage of those people that actually know how to swim. So it's one of the things that I'm going to be watching very closely, and I hope that we can draw an end to it so it's not a fight we have to continue on year after year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think I'll keep the committee posted how those conversations are going. I think there's a high likelihood that we'll be able to conclude that issue without taking defensive measures at this table to protect that institution, which, frankly, I'm prepared to do if need be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
Go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Environmental Conservation, there's $164,600 in unrestricted general funds and $15,000 in receipt authority to restore the dairy program.
The what? Excuse me, I'm sorry.
You could repeat that. We're gasping here with the mic. We'll go to Senator Wilson. So let's go ahead and repeat your slide, and we'll go to a question for Senator Von Imhoff, and then over to Senator Wilson.
Within the Department of Environmental Conservation, to restore the dairy program, there is $164,600 in unrestricted general fund and $15,000 in receipt authority.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So all the conversations that we had last year indicating that we didn't need this and that it was either going to be phased out or outsourced or whatnot, what happened?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. The department and the administration worked with the partners in the industry to find a balance where they are willing to provide some of the money necessary to continue operation of, you know, the regulatory program that allows our industry to continue.
Follow on. Is the industry, I can't remember what it was in 2019, what the total budget was. Is the industry putting in some money as well? Because I think that was the conversation that was going to happen last year, is that stakeholders were going to fund this position. So what's happening with that?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, they will be funding the $15,000 portion of this. That $15,000 will come from industry.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, I have the subcommittee, and my understanding, talking to the commissioner, was that the $15,000 was not going to come from industry, that the three entities altogether total were only going to be that $3,000, which is a little alarming to me because some of those industry stakeholders say they can put up a substantial amount more. So I guess my question is, what is the department's going to do to help to find a sustainable path going forward? With three entities, you have a goat farm, Kodiak, the dairy, cow dairy in Palmer, Wasilla area, and you have a bottling plant that is also affected in this. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to see what the administration is going to do to find a path forward. We understand that there is a potential federal subsidies that the state can apply for through the correctional department that can help offset some of these costs, and that has not been explored, or other federal subsidies that could be explored to help pay for this instead of using state funds.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I think I'll have to get back to you with some more information on the path forward and to clarify, you know, the amount of receipt authority that can be collected from industry.
Yeah, you can come forward with more detail to the committee, and then I'll pass it on to the subcommittee, obviously. Senator Wilson will be getting copies of it all when we disperse it. So we'll have the subcommittee go into more detail on that and come back to the full committee. Go ahead and continue. Oh, Senator Olson, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one of the concerns I have is that it's my understanding that the theme that has been trumpeted since this administration took over is that businesses are going to pay their own way. And I see this is one of the examples of why maybe they're not going to pay their own way, and I was wondering what the shift of mentality that was going forward from last year is not being carried on this year. And I guess that's the concern that I see.
Can the OMB director help a little bit with that, or you want to take a pass on that one?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think there's an acknowledgement of, you know, incremental steps to the industry assisting. So, you know, while $15,000 doesn't cover the full cost of the program, it does show, you know, some buy-in and skin in the game from the industry.
With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue.
Go ahead.
With all due respect, Mr. Steiniger, I think that incremental changes we're past that point right now, because we as a state are in a financial crisis. And so to the idea that that we have businesses out there that are dependent on what, I don't see that even a practical concern at this point. It's more of a comment, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm concerned that last year they're trumpeting, you know, let businesses pay their own way, let them pay their own way. We've got a simple issue right here. It was pointed out by the other co-chair that, you know, where did this come from? And so I guess that's a concern that I see where we have issues that were just talked about, where the swimming pool that's going to make it so that less people are going to drown and know how to swim is being bypassed while the state is starting to take up a bigger burden of what businesses are not willing to go ahead and take on. And that's my concern, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Health and Social Services, under the Senior and Disability Services Early Intervention Learning Program, we're removing $7 million in federal receipt authority related to a grant that the state will no longer be receiving. In the Office of Children's Services Foster Care Special Need, there's an additional $700,000 in unrestricted general funds and $700,000 in federal receipt authority for the Family First Prevention Services Act implementation. So this program is targeting families that are not yet part of the OCS population, but at risk of entering OCS services to attempt to prevent those children from being taken out of home. Also within the Office of Children's Services, under subsidized adoptions and guardianships, there's an additional $1 million in unrestricted general funds and $200,000 in federal receipt authority related to a growing number of children in subsidized adoptions and guardianships. So these are children that are no longer in state care but have been adopted or gone into guardianship arrangements with new parents, but some subsidy is provided by the state to ensure that's possible. One thing to note about this addition, that $200,000 in federal receipt authority doesn't reflect all of the federal receipts that are leveraged by that additional $1 million. They simply have enough excess federal receipt authority right now within their budget to leverage as much Fed as possible with $1 million. In senior and disabilities services, another mental health trust amendment that we received for an adult protective services position at a cost of $75,000 in mental health trust authorized receipts, as well as $75,000 in federal receipts. In behavioral health, the mental health trust has recommended a research analyst position in the advisory board on alcohol and drug abuse at a cost of $96,300, also coming from mental health trust authorized receipts.
And the roll of council. Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. Why didn't the state receive the $7 million preschool development center grant that we had anticipated?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't know the specific reasons why that grant wasn't awarded to the state.
Okay, you can get back to the committee
yes.
on why that wasn't received. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead and continue.
Also in the Department of Health and Social Services, within the commissioner's office, there's $300,000 in mental health trust receipts related to professional off-site evaluations. In Behavioral Health Administration, there is the partner access line for Pediatric Alaska at $89,000 in mental health trust receipts and peer support certification at $125,000 in mental health trust receipts. Again, within the commissioner's office, the statewide designated evaluation and stabilization design evaluation and treatment coordinator position is being recommended by the Mental Health Trust at $75,000 in receipts and $50,000 in federal receipts. And the Suicide Prevention Council is being funded at $400,000. This is a grant that's made by the Division of Behavioral Health within the Department of Health and Social Services to the Department of Education for distribution to school districts for suicide prevention. That's being funded through lapsing funds within Behavioral Health Administration. Historically, that component has had excess unrestricted general fund receipt authority, so we're proposing to reallocate that excess authority to much-needed grants within the Suicide Prevention Council.
Okay. General Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The $300,000, my understanding is there's MTAR funds for contractual services for $300,000. Is that any of that funding going to API?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think I would have to get back to you on that question.
Thank you.
Yes. You can get back to us on a breakdown of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, there's a $457,900 adjustment to the amount of technical and vocational education fund monies available for distribution. There's also a salary and benefit adjustment of $48,200 in UGF and $10,600 in other funds for the bargaining unit that represents the employees of the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. And I believe I missed a point on this slide. There's another $227,500 in those TVEP, the Technical and Vocational Education Fund adjustments.
Okay.
In the Department of Law, this is showing the corresponding actions related to the technical adjustments I mentioned in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. and this is for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to ensure that the funding is in the correct place for them to receive legal services. In the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, there's a $280,500 addition for support and management of the State of Alaska Telecommunication System, otherwise known as SATS. There's also a technical correction of $35,500 in UGF to make a technical correction to an error made in a prior budget. There's also the other side of the transfer of the administrative assistant that is coming from the Office of Information Technology. That position, when it supported the SATS and ALMAR, SATS and ALMAR systems in the Office of Information Technology, used to be funded by receipts from the Office of Information Technology. Those monies can't be spent within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, which is the reason for that $280,500 change in UGF. In the Department of Natural Resources, there's $204,300 in designated general funds for administration of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Program. There's a $200,000 grant for a boating safety program within Parks Management and Access. There's also $178,100 in unrestricted general funds in the Office of Project Management and Permitting. This is for a position to oversee the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. And there are also several changes, both on this page and the following page, related to travel for the Department of Natural Resources for inspection work, policing work in parks, and various other critical travel needs that weren't properly accounted for in the travel reduction made last year. So in the commissioner's office, that's $17,800 in unrestricted general fund, $19,800 in parks management and access, and I'll cover the other items on the next page.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. Can you talk about what the $178,100 would be used for CAFCA?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the $178,100 includes a position to oversee this commission, as well as a small amount of money for travel and some other related commodities necessary to support that position.
Okay, next page.
On the next page, continuing with the Department of Natural Resources, most of these items are related to the travel that I mentioned. So there's support for timber sales at $27,900 in unrestricted general funds, mine inspections and field work in the mining, land, and water section at $44,400 in unrestricted general funds and $65,800 in designated general funds. And within geological and geophysical surveys, there's support for response to geological hazards and coordination of development of Alaska's resources at $25,000 unrestricted general funds and $8,000 in designated general funds.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the second bullet point there, there's, I think it's a total of about $110,000 for mine inspection and field work. Will any of that money be used for Pebble Mine?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't know the specific mines that travel money would be used for, but I can get back to you.
Get back to the committee on the breakdown of that, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, and then neglected to act. Ask on the prior page, there's $17,800 for support commissioner's office execution of governor's policy. Which specific policies are we referring to there?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's not referring to specific policies, but all the policies that the Commissioner's Office of the Department of Natural Resources supports.
Follow up.
Could that money be used for either travel or discussion regarding the oil tax initiative?
through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the $17,800 would be used for general travel within the commissioner's office, necessarily regardless of the purpose.
Bishop, you have a question?
Oh, just a comment. I think we're seeing a theme here where we're adding travel money back that was taken out the year before, and I don't think we've seen the last of it, and I'm not saying that's not a good thing for the commissioner to have the authority to do the job. I'll opine on that more later, but that's what I'm seeing.
It makes it awkward when we have a new fresh face at the end of the table and we don't have the other old director here to justify the things she advocated last year. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to chime in on Senator Wilikowski's concern about the pebble mine. And it seems to me that three-fourths of your answers is I will get back to you, and this is of specific interest to me on what, if any, funds are being utilized for pebble mining. This supplemental request, along with, I would like to request what additional funds are targeted in the operating budget for the pebble mine. I know that that is above and beyond the scope of this amendment, but I would like to request that for my office and the concerns of my constituents. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you can put some of that information together and bring it back to the committee, and we'll disperse it out with the rest of the answers. Go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Public Safety, there are two related mental health trust recommendations for crisis intervention team training course, one in the Training Academy and one in the Alaska Police Standards Council, both at $80,000 apiece, totaling $160,000 in mental health trust authorized receipts.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You may not be the right person to ask this, but how much of this is going to be used to enhance or help with the recruitment and retention of VPSOs?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, my understanding on the crisis intervention team training course is that it's targeted to the Training Academy and Alaska State Troopers.
So the VPSOs have been essentially put on the back burner, if not included at all, as far as you know.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, this is a recommendation being made by the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead and continue.
In the Department of Revenue, there is restoration of efficiency savings in order to support the tax revenue management system at $346,600 in unrestricted general fund. The department had proposed these savings through reductions in personnel, but in looking at the cost of supporting the tax revenue management system, they believe they will continue to need the authority related to those positions, although reducing those positions, they will still reduce the positions related to that money. There is also $150,000 in receipt authority in the unclaimed property section, and this is related to an inventory and claims backlog that is being processed through.
So just back up to the first item, restore efficiency savings. Does that mean we reduce the budget and then now we're just adding it back because the budget reductions could not be met? Is that correct?
Chair Stedman, the reductions that were proposed to generate efficiencies, those reductions can be met, but as the department looked at the cost of bringing in the tax revenue management system and transitioning operating that system from the capital budget to the operating budget, they found that that cost was higher than they anticipated being higher than they had initially anticipated it at the development of the FY21 budget, and so they are requesting that the savings they're finding through reduction of those positions be reallocated to management of the tax revenue management system.
Next page.
In the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there's $55,000 for the measurement standards and commercial vehicle compliance section related to equipment calibration and certification. There's also $126.97 of designated general funds for a vessel construction manager to support the Inner Island Ferry Authority in their annual overhaul and construction projects.
Could you maybe explain that a little more, why we're dealing with the Inner Island?
Chair Stedman, the Inner Island Ferry Authority operates some smaller runs in Southeast Alaska, and they receive federal monies in order to do some of their annual overhaul and construction projects, but they found that the position at DOT in the Alaska Marine Highway System that previously was there to help them manage those projects and manage the collection of those federal revenues, that removing that position has, you know, resulted in somewhat of a larger burden. So that position has been added back at a cost of $127,000.
And I think that position, if I recall, not only helps facilitate the Inner Island Ferry System at dealing with their federal, the federal level, but also the Marine Highway and their federal issues also. So, and just as a note and a reminder, if the Inner Island Ferry collapses, then it diverts back to the Alaska Marine Highway System, which would cost the state significantly more funds. And I think we also subsidize Inner Island Ferry about $250,000 a year. And it's operating as we speak, which is good. Okay, go ahead and continue.
In the judicial branch, there's a total of $761,100 in unrestricted general fund amendments. Quite a few of these are related to the conversion to biweekly payroll. As the Alaska court system transitioned to biweekly payroll, they found that there's some additional costs related to the way that the paychecks hit the accounting system that requires some additional authority within their budget. On this page, I believe all of the items are related to the biweekly payroll issue. And then on the following page, there's some other items.
Senator Wilson, on this page?
Yes. Is this going to be a yearly or a one-time cost increment?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there is also related supplemental cost for FY20, and then this amount would add it into the base and shouldn't need to be adjusted in the future.
So when do we just go back to the original system if it's going to cost roughly $400,000 more a year?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, to kind of speak generally about it, the state has to operate two different payroll systems. Payroll is paid out in two different ways. You have biweekly payroll and you have semi-monthly. And managing with kind of having both of those methods of paying payroll coexist creates a lot of additional work and effort within the department administration. That transitioning to biweekly payroll will make that system work a lot more efficiently, and that's why there's a drive to transition all those that are still on semi-monthly into the biweekly payroll system.
Well, I guess my concern is the efficiency that's costing more money than the system itself to manage one or two different systems. I guess that's my general question.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the Alaska court system has requested this additional authority. However, other areas that moved over to biweekly have some other flexibility in order to accommodate slight changes in the total payroll cost. So the net effect of moving to biweekly payroll, we think, is a benefit to the state.
We got Senator Von Imhoff, then we'll go to Senator Wilkowski.
So just to build upon Senator Wilson's question, it appears from this slide that it's about $200,000-$300,000 or so more if these are reoccurring costs to go to one consolidated payroll system. It makes sense intuitively when you describe it to have one payroll system, but we're looking at the numbers here, at least according to the slide, that is in fact going to cost us more. perhaps a follow-up could be with the Department of Administration, just to simply say, these are the additional costs, these are the additional savings, do they net out? What is it? Because this looks like it's going to cost more money if it's reoccurring.
Senator Mulikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We had quite a talk about this in the Judiciary Subcommittee, and it was, I don't think, clear to anybody actually what the savings were. In fact, my recollection is that 5 out of the next 7 years will have this occurrence. This is not just a one- or two-time thing. And I'm just curious, if this is the cost just in the Judiciary, there's got to be similar costs in every other department in the state. This has got to be costing the state millions of dollars for years, for 5 out of 7 years, because it's the way that the way it was explained to us is the way this is calculated. If the ending pay period falls on a weekend, it's calculated one way. If it doesn't, but you only have 2 days that are weekends, and so in 5 out of 7 years you have these increases. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Mulikowski, yes. So some years have 260 workdays, some have 261, and some have 262. The year that we're currently in, because it's a leap year, has 262 workdays. Next year we'll have 261. This amendment that you're seeing on this slide is to reflect the cost to the Alaska court system of a year that has 261 workdays. In subsequent years, you know, this being added into their base budget, they wouldn't require an additional amendment to add more money later, just simply related to the number of days in the year. But yes, generally speaking, your statement is correct.
General Mulikowski, maybe we'll have the subcommittee do some more work and bring back some recommendations to the full committee. It's kind of an interesting dialogue here with, as we try to save money on the budget, it costs us money.
Just on that point, Mr. Chair, it is built into the base, and so what you're doing is you're increasing the base by a few hundred thousand dollars. So, and my other question was just, is this the impact that we're seeing in every other department in the state, an increase of hundreds of thousands of dollars or perhaps millions of dollars?
Through the chair, Senator Mulikowski, not all of the bargaining unions have moved into a biweekly payroll system yet. So many of them are still within a semi-monthly payroll system. The other departments that have employees that have moved into a biweekly payroll system are absorbing those costs through just through management of their existing budgets. The Alaska court system put forward a request that we've put forward related to adjusting their budget for biweekly payroll.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is much broader in information that's going to be submitted to this committee regarding payroll for 24 pay periods on a semiannual basis or 26 pay periods on a biweekly basis. How is this committee going to be able to decipher the information that's going to be presented to us? Because the 52 weeks or the 26 week pay period gives us a full year of information on the cost to the state of Alaska, and we can determine that number for all of the departments. But on a system that is biweekly, we will not get the complete picture. How is that going to be presented to this committee so we can get the true cost of what an individual person is going to be presented to the state of Alaska, let alone the thousands of individuals to us that is going to be a considerable number? And I find it a little bit baffling that it's going to, the biweekly proposal is going to cause us at this table a lot of consternation on how we are funding funding items that we don't have the true costs. And I'm just making that statement because I can envision us reviewing information that does not truly reflect the total cost to the state of Alaska before us in the future.
Can you help us with that? How we can have, how this helps with budget clarity and transparency in comparison year to year and controlling our costs?
Yes, Chair Stedman and Senator Hoffman. The Office of Management and Budget will continue to produce reports that show the cost of each individual PCN, and those costs, as those various bargaining units move over to biweekly payroll roll, will reflect the total annual cost to the state budget of those PCNs. So we will continue to provide information about the budgeted cost of each PCN, and we'll ensure that that's accurate to all the different terms of the bargaining unit, inclusive of, you know, the way that they're paid or the various adjustments to their salary and all their benefits. We do provide that information. We have it available.
Mr. Chairman, I might follow up. So we're going to get information that is what the total cost to the state of Alaska is on an individual person basis, and then we will get a cost of what it will be on a budgetary basis, that those two figures are not going to match consistently over the years. And I find that effort to cost the state of Alaska more money by having two systems that are going to be provided to this committee from here on out. And I find that system that is being proposed is going to cost the state of Alaska in the long run more funds, and it's going to cause more disinformation of how one is going to read and propose those dialogues on a specific budget basis for a department. It's going to cost us at this table heck of a lot more work to figure out what is going on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll have some discussions, I think, on this with OMB, and we'll see if we can't get some clarity on that that issue. So we have a good understanding of it. It's Senator Walikowski.
Yeah, could I also request, Mr. Chairman, the my understanding is that all departments are going to biweekly in the next year or so, and so my expectation is that we will do the 2021 budget, and then next year we're going to see a supplemental for millions of dollars, just like we're seeing now because of this conversion. And I guess that what I'd like from OMB is the projections for the next 7 years of every department and how much this will cost. This biweekly conversion will cost the state. I'm guessing it's going to be millions of dollars in additional costs.
So we can have OMB try to get back to us here on the conversion issue, and we'll circulate it amongst the committee. And if the committee members want to bring it back as a separate, you know, discussion item at the hearing, and we can do that. But go ahead and let's go on to the next page.
Continuing on with the Alaska court system, they have requested an amendment to fund additional costs related to the state's accounting system, which is called IRIS, at $30,700. And the Sitka courthouse expenses related to the maintenance of that building at $78,300 unrestricted general funds. There is also an amendment to restore full funding for the appellate court budget at $334,700, and a reverse of a portion of the additional costs that they had requested originally for the executive branch services at a reduction of $9,100 unrestricted general fund.
Historically, the three branches of government kind of stay out of the other branches of government's budgetary issues. In referring to the executive branch, the governor's budget itself, not the agency-wide. And this year, there were some changes made to the legislative branch, along with the the court system, and I see the court system is added back here. Why is there not an amendment to add back the legislative budget so we continue to abide by the unwritten rule of not going into each other's budget?
Chair Stedman, we received the request from the judiciary for all of these amendments, and as part of that, there was an agreement between the administration and the judicial branch to restore the changes made to the judicial branch's budget in our submission in December. And that's why the changes have been made for the judicial branch. I can't speak to lack of changes in the legislative branch's budget.
Well, it doesn't go unnoticed. We're trying to keep everyone in their lanes and not cross over, because we certainly respect the constitutional authority the governor has on vetoes, and we operate under that. But he cannot veto what's not in the budget. So we are not defenseless, and we're an equal branch of government. And I would recommend that the executive branch respect the legislative branch, and we're going to end up with even a bigger budget mess. So it is glaringly apparent to us, and we'll go through and fix this year, and hopefully we don't have this as a recurring issue. Go ahead and continue.
In the office of the governor, there's $67 in unrestricted general funds related to providing the Alaska Administrative Code to local governments. There's also $236,500 in unrestricted general fund related to a pay increase for election workers. In the University of Alaska budget, there's $605,900 in technical and vocational education fund distribution. This is more of the technical correction that I mentioned earlier. Okay. The following pages are amendments related to the FY 2020 supplemental budget.
We got a question from Senator Von Imhoff.
So just going back to number 22, the election worker pay increase, is this an annual thing, or is this for a particular reason?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the election workers, these are the people working to actually run the statewide general elections and other elections. Their pay had not been adjusted in quite some time, and the changes to the minimum wage in Alaska kind of leapfrogged over the pay level that they had received. So an adjustment's needed in order to have them comply with the minimum wage in Alaska, and the total cost is $237,000.
Mr. Steininger, it's my understanding that classified employees have a step program as well that automatically goes up every year. How could they not be? How could there not have been salary increases in the recent past?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, these individuals are not classified employees, and so they're not necessarily subject to those same salary schedules.
So they're independent contractors, essentially.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't know the exact employment arrangement, but.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and continue. We're on to the current year, FY20, the year we're in now. For those watching at home, we're going to talk about some budget adjustments to get us from today through the end of June.
And so first, in the judicial branch, in the Alaska court system, there is $30,700 in unrestricted general funds. These are those same costs I mentioned earlier related to the state accounting system called IRIS. There are also supplemental amendments related to the biweekly payroll issue that we covered earlier. Also in the judicial branch, there are some additional costs related to executive branch services at $75,800 unrestricted general funds. These are primarily related to cost increases in risk management rates that the judicial branch has to pay for insurance of assets and individuals. In the...
You said risk management rates in insurance of individuals or of individuals?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, a portion of the risk management rates gets applied based on the number of employees within each department. So some of the $75,800 in unrestricted general fund is related to the risk management rates that applies to employees.
Well, thank you. I just, this is not health insurance. This is not life insurance. What is insurance is this?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this would be things like workers' comp.
Workers' comp?
Yes, that runs through our risk management rates.
Workers' comp, okay.
Did we have another question, Senator?
I was just going to comment to the, if you didn't get it.
Okay, go ahead and continue then.
In the language section, operating amendments in the supplemental budget, there are changes to the judgments, claims, and settlements. There were several additional settlements totaling $5,755,900 in unrestricted general funds for total judgment settlements and claims of $5,887,600 unrestricted general funds. There's also a lapse extension for the authority that's required if bonds are issued to buy back oil and gas tax credits. This lapse extension allows us to use authority to buy back the bonds upon issuance, or buy back the credits upon issuance of bonds. In the capital section of the supplemental budget, there's a $24 million appropriation for the Alaska Land Mobile Radio System. This is to replace the equipment on those towers that are required to make that system run. Also in the Department of Public Safety, there's an amendment to an existing request for aircraft equipment required by the FAA, increasing that request by $293,400 for a new total of $398,400 unrestricted general fund. After submitting that original request, the department realized that there were several other aircraft that required this equipment.
We have Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Olson.
So thank you. So I see the $24 million for the Alaska Land Mobile Radio. Now this is going to be in addition to the $7.6 million in the capital budget, page 6, line 3 of the capital budget, proposed budget that the governor put out in December. So we're looking at 24 plus 7.6, is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, while this presentation I have is just covering supplemental and operating, there's also an amendment to that 7.6 to bring it down to 5 million. But yes, this 24 million is in addition to the 5 million. The 5 million is related to maintenance of the system. This is a refresh to legacy equipment that has to be replaced.
Follow-up?
And could you just give just a brief summary of what the Alaska Land Mobile Radio is and why we need it?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the Alaska Land Mobile Radio system allows for communications equipment used not just by employees of the state, primarily through employees of Department of Public Safety, the Alaska the state troopers, but also a lot of other law enforcement and first responder agencies throughout the state. It's also utilized by the Department of Defense. The reason for this refresh project is that some of those other non-state partners may pull out of the system if the state of Alaska does not update its portion of the system.
And those for those watching at home, Senator Von Imhoff's in charge of the capital budget. She'll be working on some of these items. Senator Olson, and then Senator, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the ADS-B system for the public safety capital improvement, are the aircraft already not have the ADS-B systems or the automatic dependent surveillance broadcast systems that he says was required by the FAA, which may or may not be true?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, my understanding is that this is a change in FAA requirements, and those aircraft, the aircraft covered under this roughly $400,000 capital appropriation, do not currently have the equipment required by the FAA to fly in the airspace that the department intends to fly those aircraft.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Did we have one or two questions on this side? Senator Hoffman, any good one? Yeah, and then Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes back to Almar funding of $24 million. Is, since we only have 4 months left in this fiscal year for 2020, is the total $24 million going to be spent and encumbered in the next 4 months?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it won't all be spent in this fiscal year. However, the project does need to start in this fiscal year in order to ensure that the other users of the system don't pull out.
So my question is, how much is going to be expended or encumbered in the next 4 months?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't know exactly how much will be expended in the next 4 months. I know the department will, you know, try as soon as this money is available to spend, they will begin work on this project.
If you can get back to the committee on that breakdown so I can get it to Senator Von Imhoff so she can integrate that into her thought process dealing with the capital expenditures. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you. You mentioned that sometimes this, the Almar could also be used for public safety type of communications. Is that also part of the $900,000 that they were looking for the Department of Public Safety was looking to do a consolidated Anchorage command center?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm not familiar with what you're asking.
Chairman,
about.
I think that's the enhanced 911 system that he's talking about.
It's an enhanced 911. It's a budgetary item that has caught some of our attention. So you could take a look at that and get back to us, help us with that issue. We'll be working on that in the operating budget side also. Senator Lukowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you just explain what the lapse extension is and how much that is?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the lapse extension, there's a sortie in the in prior budget to provide the sortie to expend the proceeds of a bond sale for the purchase of tax credits. It's approximately $800 million. That would be the lapse extension would then allow us to utilize that sortie in future years once the outcome of that litigation is decided. If it's decided in the state's favor, we could then sell bonds, use the proceeds of those bonds to purchase the tax credits with this authority. It's considered duplicated authority in our state budget, but it is necessary in order to utilize proceeds of bond sales for the actual purchase of tax credits.
And on that subject, Senator Wilikowski, when we have legislative finance come before the committee and we do our comparisons from FY 19, 20, and then looking forward into 21, there's some areas that were reduced, the Marine Highway, University of Alaska, agency operations, so we're going to have those kind of itemized, the bigger ones, the items, and then on statewide when we deal with community assistance and a few other things, handling the tax credit payment issue. I've asked them to be kind of line itemed out to make it clear to the committee when they look at the year-to-year changes, what items were actually reduced, because it's rather, I think, alarming, and at least to me. And I think the public needs to take notice that even though we've had substantial reductions at this table in several items, the overall spend rate is not down, it's up when we fix these items, or near flat compared to the management plan in 19. So we're gonna try to lay that out so we can get a clearer understanding of the challenges we have in meeting our getting our revenue to match our expenditure side. So that'll be coming next week, I think. And I've asked, again, I've asked the staff to line item some of these major items so you don't just see a total number move down in agency spend, but you actually see some of the bigger reductions. And if we can identify some of the bigger add-backs, we'll do that also. Try to make it as clear as possible. And if we can the clearer the view of the mess in the middle of the table, the more, the higher probability that we'll be able to get a solution to it. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In reviewing your presentation for FY21 supplemental request and FY2020 supplemental requests, clearly there has been no change or request from the Department of Administration for funds for the Real ID. And I might point out that Senator Olson asked our senator when she, Senator Murkowski, when she gave a presentation to the joint legislature, a question of did she see a need for the implementation of the Real ID and its implications of public safety to the people of Alaska. Her response to the senator from Gullivan was that the state of Alaska needs to step up and present the legislature with resources to get that implemented. And I find it alarming that neither funds for FY 2020 or FY 2021 have been requested, because it is a health, life, safety issue to ensure that the Real ID, particularly for those of the elderly, are met. And I wonder if you might comment upon the good Senator Murkowski's comment that state resources need to be expended. Do you believe that, or you don't believe that, and that is why there is no request to address the health, life, safety of Alaskans in this budget?
You can help Senator Hoffman with the Real ID concern.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I'm not familiar with the comments made by Senator Murkowski. However, the Department of Administration has not requested any additional funding related to implementation of the Real ID Act.
Senator Hoffman.
I'm not worried about what the Department of Administration is requesting. This is the governor's budget requests. And my question is this administration, does this administration recognize the health, life, safety of Alaskans regarding the Real ID and the comments that were made by Senator Murkowski? This is not if the commissioner of the state of Alaska does not see it fit to request those funds, does this administration agree with that position of the commissioner or disagree with that? And I'm assuming that this administration is agreeing with the position of the commissioner because there are no funds requested for the safety of Alaskan citizens, particularly those in rural Alaska that are elderly.
You want to comment on that or take a pass?
Pass. It is critical to the citizens of the state of Alaska. I would.
Senator Hoffman, just speaking to the mic. And then
it is critical that this question be asked of this administration. So I would ask that a response be given by this administration to this question instead of passing on this most important issue that is critical to the health, life, safety of Alaskan citizens.
So we have any
do you have a response to that?
Well, I think he's going to take a pass, but do you want to make a comment or not? It's up to you.
I think I'll have to defer to the Department of Administration and the governor's office.
That's fine. That's fine. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're in a very difficult position, but I think the people that are in even more in dire straits are the people that after October 1st are not going to be able to have real IDs. And as was pointed out by the senator from Bethel, I don't see anything in the operating budget. I don't see anything in that's going to be coming in the capital budget to try and make it so that they do have the resources to go out and buy these biometric cameras that are necessary, as well as far as getting them out to the place that most desperately are going to need that real ID out there. And so that's the concern that I have. There seems to be a not just a complacency, but a actual written off attitude by the Commissioner of Administration. It's not her concern. It's not her mandate. She's maybe put an effort out there, but the effort was at the level of asking people to put private funds into a governmental department that is responsible for that. And so that I find just downright offensive. I realize that's not your department, but it's concerning that I don't see anything in the operating or the upcoming capital budget for what's definitely needed. And people are going to be in dire straits out there when they get stuck someplace that can't get through TSA.
I think we've made the concern of several committee members blatantly clear. We'll hopefully have some dialogue with the administration over the next 2 months and see if we can't rectify that issue. We have final comments from the OMB director, or we want to try to end on a positive note. You know, we had this issue at the end of another meeting here a while back, but I would like to note that there was no lifelines called by the new OMB director. He had some difficult questions. He did respond well to the committee. We'll wait to get written responses back from quite a few questions, and then we'll proceed. But do you have any final comments?
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Thank you to the committee. We'll respond back with answers to the questions that I couldn't provide answers to today. And you know, I think one of my earlier slides really highlights why it's difficult to end this on a positive note with such a significant deficit in front of us.
I thought you did very well today answering the difficult and sometimes pointed questions without asking for a lifeline. So it is appreciated at the committee here. These are it's a difficult task in front of both of us. Both the branches of government trying to right the physical ship of the state. So it's probably going to get a little bit more turbulent before we get through the storm, but we'll get through it. So that concludes the meeting today. I'd like to thank everybody for coming and the patience everybody had at the table as we worked through these issues. Tomorrow we're going to have Senate Bill 50, Employment Tax for Education Facilities. That will be at the table. Senator Bishop is enthusiastically waiting for tomorrow morning. It will be chaired by Senator Von Imhoff, and we will have the first hearing of that bill here at the table. And we are adjourned.